there's a obviously a huge difference between sitting with your feelings versus taking agency and actually knowing that we are alchemists of those feelings. And so getting your move on, taking a few deep breaths, and then quite a few more till you are recalibrated. Like, sit down until you're different.
Yeah, I forgot to hit record in the beginning. I got you though. What Cameron was talking about was how he deals with the unwanted guests in his home on the rise. Yeah, man. You know, I think the problem is that in our society, you're really not seeing anybody take the space to do that. You know, I didn't anyway, growing up, see anybody take the space to address what was going on within them and to take a head count of what's going on and breathe through it. You know, it's a very fast-paced, very suppressed way of being.
Oh, just rigid and brittle. You know, it's that unyieldingness that I think people get stuck in, right? Because we do have this choice of aversion or ascension, and it's a choice that can be made in every moment. Like this morning, I woke up just with a cranky guest in my home, me, my home being me, this space of awareness. And that guest was like, ah, fuck it. I don't want to do it. And I go, well, that's not really an attitude conducive to the things that you want to do today, my friend. So we're going to sit down and breathe till we're different. And we're going to move, and we're going to stress and stretch this tension out and soften. To soften, I think that's a huge part.
Bro, you know, that's something I really like about you is your softness. I've been on a journey of becoming more soft, because I feel like I am a, yeah, man. You help people connect with the gentle part of themselves. That's what you do, which is very nice. And by the way, I know we just jumped right into it. I want to just say, I think you make amazing videos. I think the frequency that you're emitting is beautiful, and I really honor you and see you for having the courage to look at the deepest, darkest parts of yourself so that you can come back, you know, anew, born again, which I'm assuming happened at some point.
I mean, it's almost a daily thing.
Yeah, it's for sure a daily thing. I guess I just I think about my own life, and there's definitely like there's chapters and then there's books, you know. I feel like my life may be like a, it feels more like a 10 book series, like an encyclopedia of stories, you know.
Yeah, big time, man. I mean, like, thank you for those words. That was affirming, and you know, it feels so good to be seen fully like that. You know, because when we are seen in that really raw and pure way, like that unobstructed perception, it calls you to the surface. It calls all of that that is seen to the surface so that it can be. You know, it's not trying to get out, it just is there. And sometimes it takes someone to see that to actually, be a catalyst for that emergence and for that expression. And when we do that, when we create that space for unobstructed perception, perception that's not clouded by judgment or criticism or shame or guilt, jealousy, envy, it's just, I see you. Seeing is happening. You are in that scene.
Yeah, bro, I definitely see you. And you know, that's what you do for people with your videos. It's, and you know, that's what we do as, I mean, in whatever the hell we're doing here. It's just affirming. It's affirming exactly how you said that was affirming to you. That's what we're doing, because I've realized most people don't have cool friends. Like, most people don't have friends that really speak their language on a deep level, that can see them and like, and give them that sense of validation. Not that you should need the validation, but like, yo, we're social creatures, and goddamn, does it feel good, right, to be seen, like you said. But yeah, most people just don't have cool friends, man. Because I mean, I remember a time where I didn't have cool friends, where my life was really just moving into a point where a lot of people started to fall away. And then for years, I found myself just empty. And every time I would try to like get in a relationship with someone, I'm not talking like women, I'm talking like just even like friends. It was just, things weren't aligning. And I had to be solo for a long time. So I can really appreciate good friends now.
Man, it's such a truth. Like, you know, we do need that validation, especially in the beginning, because it's ammunition, it's energy, and it, you know, it's a confirmation of your place and your person and your, you know, your purpose, your passion, confirmation that you're not alone in thinking what you think. And you know, we have worldly friends that are, and I don't mean worldly like they're global travelers, I mean, you know, things, places, events, I'm saving up for this and I got to pay off that and one day I'm going to be able to do that and I'm climbing up the social hierarchy and there's a quiet despair inside and I use that despair as a conduit for getting more, but the more doesn't end up filling anything up. It's a very temporary arrangement. And then we have, for lack of a better word, spiritual friends, you know, meta friends, the friends that simply by being in their presence, you are more and you can be more. And that space is created for all of you. And there's this energy of, I mean, empowerment is one word, but to be with people that question, really question and think deeply and reflect and introspect, you fashion these beautiful relationships because you actually recognize what a relationship is and you get to be the architects of that rather than, oh, I'm just around these people because they're here.
Mm. I'm grateful to have none of those in my life. You know, I kind of got lucky too. I like didn't go to college or anything. And, you know, I've just always kind of been, I was in like this little town in Ohio, you know, I was just like, I don't fuck with any of this. Like, I don't want to go drink beer, you know? So I've always been like, just trying to make something happen in that little town. There was nobody really on that wave. But here we are now, baby. Here we are now.
We are.
And that's the power of social media, man. Like, someone commented on my post the other day and I was like, oh shit, that's right. He was like, dude, accounts like yours are like the next phase of what social media can be, as opposed to like mindless celebrity entertainment or something. You know?
It's amazing the juxtaposition, the contrast. Like, I went into a supermarket yesterday and I try to avoid doing that whenever possible because they spiral me out, dude. And I was at the checkout and the magazines.
Oh,
the magazines, dude. I had to take a photo. It was like, wife murdered with a hammer and dumped in a river. And I'm like, this is just front and center. People are standing there with their kids waiting to check out, waiting to go home and cook dinner. And they're just greeted with just vitriol, just the nastiest shit you could ever put in your consciousness. And they're just like, have a good day.
What a disgrace.
It is a disgrace.
What a disgrace.
That's what I felt.
It's a disgrace.
How dare you?
Yeah, it's a disgrace. I think that about a lot of fucking things, dude. And you're in Australia.
Yeah.
I haven't been. How similar is that to American culture?
There are definitely similarities, but I wonder how many of those are just the similarities of human beings. You know, Australian culture definitely took a lot of seeds from the United States because it was always like a little brother type situation, but definitely kind of diverged in recent years, I feel. You know, and it's hard because Australia is greeted with the news America, And so they don't see community and friends and people on the ground doing things they love and fostering community and growth and expansion and love. They see the worst. And so that's, they're like, well, we don't want anything to do with that. So they definitely look at the states as like, what is going on? Why are you guys like this? Why don't these changes happen that seem obvious to us? Like, Australia is a level-headed place. It's not extremist really in any way. Like the political spectrum is so much more, it's less important to people. Like, people do not walk around affiliating themselves and identifying as, oh, I'm this kind of politics and I'm that kind of politics. So like, oh, the people are in government and they're doing things that really I'm not seeing in front of my eyes. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Like, people are really grounded in that sense. But also because of that, maybe a little bit less empowered to make the changes. So there's, you know, like toll poppy syndrome is a thing in Australia, like kind of making fun of whoever's trying until they're successful. And then it's like, wow, look at you. Wonderful job. But if you're trying, you know, it's the same thing of like any rural place as well. You know, I grew up in rural Montana. So what I'm doing is pretty strange.
Oh,
when
yeah.
My childhood friends think about it, they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, these videos are not for you, bro. But if you, you know, if you vibe with it, then you vibe, but this is not for you.
Bro, Cam, this is a great point because I feel like, well, first off, I'll say I feel like we're in an art renaissance where like social media is actually like empowering people to create their art. And of course, when I post these videos talking about this, there's the cynics on TikTok saying, be fucking realistic, bro. We're not all just going to make videos, which is true, but that's not what I'm saying. Anyway, now I totally got off track thinking about those people. You see how those people infiltrate our mind like that? You know what's funny, though?
That's a psyop, dude.
I'll say this, bro. So of course, like early on in your journey, you binge all the Alan Watts. And I recently was driving through Colorado, like literally just like last week. And I listened to an Alan Watts talk and I was like literally howling in my car. I was like yelling. I was like, this is on another level. And what he was talking about was how we need the quote unquote bad people. We would be nothing without the bad people. Because the like that is what drives the good. Is the bad people, the contrast, it's the yin, the yang to everything. It's like, and you look at it with anybody, you look at it with us, the spiritual people on Instagram, all the way to the people in church that just, you know, talk about all the shitty people. And, you know, we need the shitty people. It's a fascinating topic. I was yelling. I was like, whoa. I was like, this is it's so true. And it's like, and it's liberating.
It is liberating because you get to let go of any expectation that they shouldn't be there. You know, it just, it's another layer of like, oh, things are as they are. You know, that contrast is so necessary. I mean, that's the kind of the contract of this dual experience, is that we can be as connected to non-duality as we want, but separation is kind of baked into this plane of existence. Yeah. And so that is a contract of contrast. Like, we only know anything because of its counterpart, and it cannot exist without its counterpart. Everything has that polar opposite, and then it's like this paradoxical snake that eats itself. And you know, I think about the things that I've said and the things that I do, and just like the, you know, the practice, and it's like, I don't do the practice because I'm good all the time. I wouldn't have any need for a practice. Like, I wouldn't need to do the things that I do. I don't just like sit down and breathe because I'm like, yes. Sometimes I do.
Right. Sometimes.
I'm like, let's recalibrate. Let's try and get back to, like, you know, it's this constant harmonic tuning almost. Yes. And we have this vessel that is the tool for tuning into what resonates. And when we are in that resonance, that's when, you know, coherence between the mind and the heart, between inside and outside. And in that coherence, we can see those people that project suffering, and we can give them love in return. And that's this, it's like the homeostasis of mankind.
Wonderfully said. Very poetic. Very poetic, Cameron. What I was going to say, I remembered, was that I think people are wanting to put out their art, right? And the only audience they have is 900 people from their school or their hometown, right? And when you said, these videos aren't for you, bro, you know, it's like, I can count on one hand the people that I know of that even follow my stuff that I knew from like growing up. And I mean, what do you say to those people, right? It's like, do you start a new account? Because a lot of people, I think so too, because a lot of people don't even post because there's like four or five people that they just cannot, they can't do it because the thought of those people meeting up with that person and talking about, oh my God, Cameron's so stupid. Who does he think he is with his podcast? That fucking stops people, man. So I think that's the way to go too. Just start over. I mean, I did.
Absolutely. I mean, like I did as well. That's why I went to TikTok to begin with, because there was no friends. It was a new thing. And so it was like, oh, this is a blank slate. Nobody knows me here. I can be anyone. Ooh. Ooh. And then I was, and then I got to explore and expand without any external conditions mitigating that expression. And I remember when I went to go to Instagram, my buddy Joe, who is like just my social guru and just has helped me through this whole process, he's like, you got to start posting on the gram. And I'm like, no, I don't want to. He's like, why? I'm like, well, because there's like four or five people that I don't want to see it, and I don't want them to think weird things about me, even though they're not doing anything with their lives, so to speak. Like, they're not, they don't care. They're not judging me. I do not take up any notable amount of conscious budget. They don't care. And I'm projecting my own insecurities on them. And once you just let it go and let it out, the people who want to stick around will stick around. And the people who don't, won't care. In which case, how many years do people spend with that oppression? That actual self-social oppression, never able to see what beauty and connection and love comes from sharing you and having that expression. And, you know, there's that fear of judgment is so deeply ingrained in people. And this is why, you know, going back to aversion or ascension, you know, we can make these choices that, through deciding to ascend and going, like sharing that thing, we break through multiple layers of that oppression. It's like all of those little seeds of doubt and insecurity and our perceptions of what people think might be perceiving of us. We break through all of that by just deciding to share. And it's coming back to this intention of why we're sharing and then letting go of any expectation of what that sharing should result in. Because when we continue to act in that intention, and it's like, well, all right, maybe my intention is just to share what I love, share this thing that I made, share this craft, this practice that I had to evolve with over time. Like, I put love and energy and conscious energy into this thing. My intention is to share that. And through that, we create that space that allows other people to share that of themselves. And disappointment, anytime we experience that disappointment, it's like not an indication that we're doing the wrong thing or that we failed or that we're not right. It's that we had an expectation that was implicit and maybe unspoken and unrealized, and we failed to meet this expectation. And that's, you know, a gift of awareness. Oh, I had an expectation. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, next time I won't expect that.
Yes. Yeah. Bro, it's almost, you know, it's almost an outlaw move to share your life openly. You know, I feel like an outlaw I feel like a gang, like in the mob sometimes, you know? And you, you're funny, like, cause you're an outlaw for sure. But you're so soft and you're so unassuming, you know? It's kind of like, it almost feels like I'm the nomad adventurer sailing around the world, and you're the Zen monk who I come and visit when I'm in your neck of the woods, you know? That kind of thing.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that, dude.
Feel like you're like a, yeah, you're there, you're doing your thing, you know. It's fun, man.
It's like, you know, what are these archetypes that we're representing or embodying? And you know, I think to myself, would Alan Watts have had a podcast? Mm. Would he have been making TikToks? Like these people that we grew up listening to, these really profound teachers and guides, they emerged from the conditions that they were in, and that kind of teacher, that kind of speaker, they continually emerge throughout mankind. But now we are emerging into this infinitely scalable, infinitely leverageable global distribution of that spoken word. Like, I'm 25. I feel like a baby, and to be able to speak a few words into existence and have that many people connect and resonate, it's such a trip. And it's like, you know, a big part of it has been, you know, reconciling and realizing what it is that I'm doing here and why it is that I'm here. Not from like this, you know, fatalistic godly perspective of why I'm here, but why do I feel this urge and need and desire to show up and do this? And then, you know, having these correlations, like my fiance, she's like, well, you have all these thousands and thousands of followers. I see other people getting free stuff all the time. Why aren't we getting free flights and free hampers and baskets? And I was like, I don't care about that stuff. And so they're not going to give it to me because I'm not going to ask, because I'm not going to go and promote it. And that contrast of, this is not a money thing. This comes from a place of giving, because you want to give. And that in itself is, it gives you something in return that money cannot buy.
Mm. Cam, like, big Cam sitting with the facts. Mm. Sitting with the facts. Bro. Oh, I know. I'm in the same boat. I think about that kind of stuff too. I was just telling my fiance today, by the way, I turned 25 3 days ago.
Happy birthday.
Thanks, buddy. And I was telling her, I was like, you know, I know people who don't pay for any of their travel. You know, they like hit up these like Airbnb hosts and are like, hey, I'll make this video if you do this. And I wonder why I've never done that. And it's pretty simple. I only really do what flows. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very clear if it's flowing or not. And that's just something that doesn't flow with me. Like, you know, it almost seems like, and I'm not saying there aren't cases in which I would never do this, but it almost seems like, you're reaching. I don't reach. I just accept.
Right. And it's like, there are definitely, you know, elements though of our own childhood and, you know, seeing the way that our parents related to money and what money means to us energetically, emotionally, and that maybe if some of those early childhood factors would be slightly different, those opportunities would feel like flow. You know, you'd happily accept a brand deal and you'd have no problem with it. And so it's like that, knowing that energetic relationship to, you know, opportunities and to doing those things is not itself a inherent truth. It is just as subjective as our thoughts and our words and everything else. And, you know, working on that, you know, how do I relate to money? How do I relate to this process? And how can I, you know, alter and refine this relationship so that I don't have to feel bad about taking these opportunities, so that I can feel good about securing success and looking at money as just another, you know, currency of energy, another exchange that occurs in this universe. And, you know, there have been times for sure where, you know, that the short-term payout is never it.
No, I just posted a video about this. Never.
Doesn't feel good. And it the return you get on that.
Yeah.
Is not growthful unless we're always actively deriving wisdom from our experience, ideally. But the return on that is quick, and it doesn't feel good that short-term payout is so temporary that, you know, with this stuff that I'm doing, like I just made the decision recently, I got a job. And it's a dope job. It's rad. Like, it's exciting. Like, I'm opening up a dispensary up here.
Cannabis?
Pretty much like, yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So I'm a cannabis educator, and the title they've given me is Cannabis Educator and Business Development Guru.
Ooh.
Rad. They're like, we didn't know what to call you. I'm like, I don't either, dude.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. It's about finding what works for you. All of these kinds of decisions are deeply personal and nuanced, and there isn't one size fits all. That's one of the things about podcasting and doing what we do is, you know, I think it's important to recognize that no matter how much you look up to somebody or are inspired by somebody or resonate with somebody, they still are not you. They're nowhere close to you. And they have a very, very, very different journey than you.
Like, it's why comparison is such a mute game, because, you know, I think Brené Brown said this, but comparison stems from conformity, because it says, I want to be like them, but also better. It's like, there are no fixed points. There are no finish lines. Your path emerges step by step. You can look at others for inspiration, but ultimately you have to be the own individual topographer of your reality, and that means exploration and experimentation and continually tuning into what feels right. And when we are faced with these overarching grand questions of like, what am I doing, where am I going in life, it's like, what feels good right now? What would make me feel good right now? Because whatever answers we come up with conceptually, the contents of those thoughts are far less important than the emotional correlates we have to those thoughts. And so, like, when we are thinking poorly, returning to the body, returning to the feeling, and letting go of all of those questions and the idea that you need to know any of that, and really recognizing how immediate and now everything is, and that anything beyond isn't.
Yeah, this is huge. I'm realizing that I'm at the point where, like, if you had to ask me, like, what is the point of the human experience in one word, it's to feel into what's happening within you, around you. And a lot of us in today's society think our feelings. We think so. Mm-hmm. So somebody right now hears you and I say, what would make you feel good right now? And then you think of things, and then you think of why they would make you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how you opened this up, man, this is so huge. It's a big part of my life, is sitting and breathing and examining and taking inventory. You don't even have to sit if you don't want to sit, but put yourself in position where you're not listening to music, where you don't have a podcast on, where you can just hear your own brain think and observe what's happening within you. Take note, because there's nothing worse than running around all day just completely uncentered.
Mm-hmm.
Learning how to breathe. I mean, man, like, there's nothing worse, because then you wake up and then the day just scoops you. It just swoops you up. And you're in the, it's like, think of it like, you went surfing without your surfboard when you're not centered.
Yeah, just
you know what I mean? You
have ragdolled.
Because you have nowhere to come back to when the shit gets fucking rough, dude. You know what I mean? Like your surfboard, you come back to your surfboard. That's your safe place. That's where you are in the best position to ride the wave efficiently, effectively, and have a good fucking time in the process.
Hey everyone, so happy you're enjoying the podcast. Just got a quick announcement for you guys. Want to let you know I have finally found the right company to sponsor the podcast. I've been waiting for something that felt in alignment, something that made sense. And now here we are. We're with Keto Brains. I found Keto Brains organically 4 months ago in Lazy Acres. I saw my friend Ben was using it. And it was kind of in my field. I had seen it at Lazy Acres. I was like, okay, let me try this. So a few months ago, I grab a bag and I start putting it in my coffee. And before I was using butter, which was actually really hard to travel with because I'm traveling a lot. So like the sealable bag was a big thing for me. And I was like, oh my God, only has 5 ingredients. MCT powder, organic coconut milk powder, lion's mane, alpha GBC, L-theanine. That's it. 5 ingredients. No fillers, no weird preservatives, nothing like that. So gave it a try. I've been loving it ever since. So I met with Kyle and Molly, the owners, brother and sister duo based here in Santa Barbara. Beautiful people, very knowledgeable. And this is a family business. You know, this is a product that was made with love for their personal use that we now get to enjoy. And it's packed with all the good stuff, and I fucking notice when I'm not using it. So thank you, Keto Brains, for stocking me up, and I won't have to worry about that. They also have their own coffee, which is very cool. You can get your Keto Brains. You can save $5 if you hit the link in the description of this podcast. Keto Brains is the real deal. They're fucking with me. They are fucking with us. They rock with the community. So let's support them. Let's get healthy brains, because we can't be out here trying to start a fucking revolution with dumb brains. Okay, love you guys. Enjoy the rest of the episode. Get your Keto Brains.
You need that unconditional place to return to, and you know, I think a big theme of our practice, and I mean practice by the spectrum of things that we engage in to alter our biological state, so that changes our emotional state, our energetic state, the state of our thoughts. It's that refinement process, but so much of it is remembering. Like, you sit down long enough and you will remember like something primordial, this uninterrupted backdrop of reality that's quiet and peaceful and always there. And always beneath that surface, we can always return to that. And you know, so often I think that, you know, back to that, the intellectualization of feelings and the intellectualization of health and the intellectualization of everything and the abundance of information and how that can create scarcity of understanding, because that information has no emotional correlate. It's just concept, not threaded into our actual, you know, it's not threaded into our gray matter, not in a way that adds to the context of reality. And so often I've just caught my mind doing this the other day, and it was a big realization that my mind is often trying to think its way through stuff that is not its responsibility, stuff that is the body's responsibility. Like I think, oh, you know what, I have yoga tonight, but I could so easily cancel it because my mind's thinking about how, you know, it's a vinyasa class and Jay is a really, you know, he's a tough teacher and I'm going to suffer and there's going to be so much effort involved. Not the mind's responsibility. The body will take care of all of that. Just use the mind to show up. And if I'm on that mat, the rest will literally unfold. And it's like putting yourself in these positions where the rest is non-effort. And, you know, non-effort as in, I'm not going to leave that yoga class once I'm in it. I'm there. I am absolutely there. Right. I just get to allow things to unfold and find that flow. And, you know, that helps with everything. You know, so often, you know, we have these positive impulses of like, oh, you know what? I should go for a hike. And then the mind's like, yeah, but you know, it's going to be tough.
Right. It's cold outside, man. Or yeah, whatever it is, whatever it is, whatever it is.
That's the body's responsibility. The mind is, of course it thinks it's full of effort because it's not its domain. The mind's not going to perceive it as like, oh yeah, easy peasy. It's like, it's the mind is a blob. It can't hike.
Right. Dude. You know, that for me, I had to like develop over years an intimate relationship with my body, you know, to come to these understandings, because I resonate with everything you're saying. And I know a lot of people do too. And I also know that there's people that are like, how the fuck do you get to this place where you're able to just snap between the soul and the body and the mind? And how can you sit in all these different places? I feel like I'm fucking stuck. I feel helpless. I mean, that's just the truth of where a lot of people are. I read the feedback, man. I read the comments, you know. I'm not on like a Tony Robbins frequency, but something I heard him say years ago, it's just so true. He said, any response that you get or give to another human being is either a loving response or a cry for help. That's the only two options of a response. A loving response or a cry for help. Nothing else.
That's pretty spot on. Like, and this is, you know, this is a really fundamentally challenging part of what I want to do, but I have not done, which is, you know, approaching that topic of the body, of health, of movement, because it's when you are in those states, I'll just call them, for lack of better words, lower vibrational states, lower states of consciousness. And by that, I mean shame, guilt, fear, apathy, those states of consciousness. You know, every state of consciousness has its own character of energy and its own kind of reserve of usable energy. And, you know, shame, the character of its energy is not really conducive to growth and expansion. And also there's not that much energy to use. Whereas like those higher states of consciousness, you think about the state of consciousness of love, the quality of that energy is so powerful and you got so much of it. And when we are perceiving these things through states of shame or guilt or apathy, it's not an empowered relationship. And so much of what we're trying to do is not say, hey, go on, get off your feet and go move, go run around. It's, hey, we got to change our relationship to the symbology, because it's what is seen is how it's seen. And if we can change how we see it, then what we see becomes something empowering and something exciting. You know, like, you know, people know they should exercise, right? But that knowing is perceived through shame, guilt, and fear. I should be, I gotta be, I must be.
Yeah. Yeah.
To remove that symbology and be like, ah, I want to play. Mm-hmm. I want to move around because it feels good, because I'm here, not because of what the CDC is saying and right. What I was taught in high school about how many hours I should be exercising. It's like, no, I'm here to enjoy and go deep into the context of this experience. And my body is most of this thing. Like, I'm more than a head walking around with thoughts that happens to have a body that has needs. It's like, this is a whole ecosystem, a yes. galaxy unto itself.
Yes. It's an entire ecosystem that must be nurtured and tended to. And you could say it's an ecosystem that needs to be protected, but I feel like protected comes from a place of defense. It comes from a place of, I'm not safe. I better protect myself, which, you know, I saw you commented on the video on TikTok. It's like, how can we come out of that contracted state, and how can we face the world breathing deep into our balls, in our truth, in our truth, with love in our heart? Can we face the world like that? Can we face the world like that? Because you come to realize that it's not that scary. And that all your fears are simply projections. It's simply a projection. You think that those four or five people are sitting around thinking about you all day. They don't give a fuck. We project it all outward onto other people. We love to do that. Even with love, we like to project that onto other people. I've caught how I've done that so many times. Like, had a massive 5-gram penis envy journey in Santa Barbara up on this hill, 2 p.m. sun, no clouds in the sky, just getting singed, rolling around in the dirt, feeling all of the love, all, like just sobbing uncontrollably. I've never, never in my life has that much mucus come out of my nose. And I immediately after the journey go back to the house, and it's my fiance's mom and her husband, Alan, who I'm very close with. They're like us. And I was like, Alan, I felt all of your love for me. I said, I felt all of your love for me. And he was just looking at me like, what? And then Mackenzie, my fiance, goes, babe, it has nothing to do with Alan. You know, I was still like, and then I went and smoked a joint. I mean, just to like, you know, I'm like in the hot tub, just like on another level. Like, Alan, I felt all of your love. I don't even know what happened, you know? And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about, bro? And I realized like, oh my God, that's the love within me, within the universe that flows within every single one of us. It's, can we get out of the way? Love isn't something to go find. You know, peace isn't something that you go find. Peace and love are the core. It's about just getting rid of all the shit in the way.
Softening so that love can come out. Like, people's hearts are hardened over because they've sent all their energy to their mind, nothing there.
Yeah.
Like, it's to sit down really, you know, and do just a loving meditation where all you do is breathe into your heart.
Yes.
And quest with your attention deeper, deeper, deeper into the sensation of what is occurring there. You know, letting go of the need to label it or name it or describe it or figure out why this is occurring. Just quest deeper into that sensation. And the deeper you go, it's like the concept of the heart loses its shell and the heart becomes open. The concept of the body loses its edges and suddenly you dissolve into everything, and like molecule by molecule, you can experience deeply the never-ending flow of stimuli and reality and phenomena just emerging every single moment in you, coming from you, not dependent on anything like that. Like, you can sit and do nothing and become everything. That is fucked up.
That was not what I was expecting to come out of your mouth. That is fucked up. You know, one thing that really helped me connect with my body and heart was something that Ram Dass said in a meditation I was listening to one time. He said, breathe as if you have nostrils on your heart space.
Oh, you just activated me.
I know, right? It activated something within me too. When I heard that, my life changed forever.
Oh man, I can't wait to go meditate now. I mean, I'll breathe
okay.
Now, but like,
let's end this. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's,
oh, that's
it's
fantastic.
It's a game changer. It goes directly in. It's like, you don't have to make this bypass through the nose and down the throat and into the heart. All that's just cut out, and you're just breathing directly into the heart space by a simple awareness shift.
I also have nostrils on my balls too.
Yes. Oh, you got to. You got to. Yeah.
You sniffing like a hound, dude. Breathing in the mother earth.
Were you on Elliot Hulse back in the day?
No.
Oh, I was a bodybuilder at like 18 and shit. So I was in like that world, and there was this guy, and he's cool. He was different than the other guys. He was more focused on like strength and like functional stuff as opposed to bodybuilding, which is what I was in. But he used to always say that. He had a huge audience, and he was telling all these kids, breathe into your balls. And I'm like, Elliot Hulse, that's valuable information.
I will carry this forever.
Yes, that's how it goes, man.
This is a pillar.
So wild how we do that. You remember
even
something.
Like, Well, you know, it's interesting because I've had to really train my visual systems. I only realized this a few months ago that I wasn't naturally geared towards visualization. Like I've never been one to like, oh, this is my vision. It's like my vision comes in feeling. It's now I can attach an image to that, but like that doesn't mean that there's any actual relation whatsoever. My way of understanding has always been words, which makes sense because I speak them and I write them, and that's how I, you know, chisel understanding out of this. And visualization meditations were always challenging for me, because, you know, I probably just didn't put that much attention into it, and I had to really almost train that occipital region of the brain to connect to that imagination again. And doing that now, it's like, you know, realizing that change your state, you can alter your traits. In that altered state, you can amplify these traits that you want to hardwire into your neurobiology. And if you know, we have this a tendency to experience, you know, the world in a certain way. Like, you know, you can hear it when people speak. They might say, oh, that doesn't sound too good, or oh, that doesn't look too good. Oh, that doesn't feel too good. Like that person is understanding through feeling, one through sight, one through hearing. You know, that's that their primary modes of digestion. But you can build out that spectrum to be, you know, an arsenal of receptivity where you open up all of those nodes, again, softening the senses so that they may receive. And through that process of softening, we become unobstructed and direct. We make direct contact with reality as it is instead of what it should be.
Bars. Yeah, I mean, dude, fucking softening has been huge for me. I will never forget. So I don't know if you've ever seen me talk about this, but like I from 17 to 21 was on steroids for real, like hardcore. And I was a 250-pound 20-year-old of pure muscle, and I built myself into a shell, into a character, a scared little boy in this like big shell. And so my journey for the last 4 years has been peeling back that shell. And it's spiritual, it's a peeling and a softening on every level, on every plane, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, energetically, physically, right? I just got a massage today. Like I do like body work regularly to body work. Everybody hears me talk about it in my podcasts, but like body work is a lifesaver. Like if you can find somebody who's tapped into the body that can just move some stuff around and feel into you and speak to your body in a way that allows it to soften. I mean, it's so powerful. And anyway, along my journey, I met Tara, who is Alan, who I was telling you about. It's his daughter. And she's like in her 40s. She's a Chinese medicine practitioner. She's incredible. Such a beautiful person. And I was heavy on my Wim Hof at this time. And like in that really extreme, you know, I straight up did Wim Hof and ice therapy for like 2 years straight, like every day, intense breath work, cold. It was very intense. And she's like, Jarrett, I just can't help but feel that you need to take a soft and easy route out of this now. You know, the extreme, you've gotten your body's attention. You've awoken something. It doesn't want this anymore. It doesn't need this extremist. And something she said to me, which I think like learning how to breathe, feeling into the breath rather, has changed my life more than anything. And she also said, she's like, you're breathing so hard. You're trying so hard. She said, let the body breathe you. It gives me tingles down my body right now. Let the body breathe you, you know? And that's And it's still, you know, it's something I, it's a daily thing. It's a daily thing. It's a daily thing to tune into my neck and my shoulders and my traps, because we walk around, we are hunched up. It's like you, I'll mention like my shoulders, dropping my shoulders, and everybody in the room goes, whoa. Every single person drops their shoulders and goes, oh my God. It's so easy to do. It's so easy to get into this space where you're like a scared armadillo trotting through the desert, just hoping something doesn't come and get you. Instead of facing the world, you stand up, you unravel that shell, and you look up and you're like, dude, there's nobody around. Nobody, nothing's not, there's no threats. There's no threats. Let me enjoy the sunset and breathe in the air.
And that's the paradox of softening, right? Like, you know, when we talk about softening, we aren't saying just become a gelatinous blob that, you know, is getting kicked in the guts. It takes strength to soften.
Ooh,
because
yes.
we're ascending something. And, you know, when we soften, we stand taller. Like our posture is better through softening. And, you know, that idea of, am I breathing or am I being breathed? Placing ourselves in experiences where we can go, oh, am I moving or am I being moved? Am I dancing or am I being danced? Am I seeing or is sight happening in and of itself? And I am a witness to this miraculous thing.
Mm-hmm.
Take strength to soften, because you have to be willing. And yeah. It's a daily process, because when we do not shake, like, you know, you see animals in the wild, and animals in the wild always shake their body to get rid of trauma. You know, like a horse gets bitten and it shakes its rump, or a gazelle has a near miss with a crocodile and it stands on the bank shaking itself until that energy has gone through. Mm. We do not shake. We have no intuitive movements. We are stiff and robotic and becoming more condensed and stiff over time. And, you know, you look at a child and how many unique, weird shapes they're making all the time. They are being moved. They're not moving. They don't know what they're doing. It is just happening in and of itself. And we can soften into that surrender to that body that intuitively it has this ancient primordial energy. But because we get so stuck in the thoughts, we neglect the fact that we are feeling creatures that have the capacity to think. And this ancient intelligence of that nervous system, of this body, of this endocannabinoid system, that it's a harbor. It's safe. It knows this earth. It is this earth. And when we are stuck in the thoughts, it's like we're looking at the leaves of the tree and not seeing that this thing is rooted and strong, secure. Come back to that. And the shoulders, man, like I just release them, and then, you know, they inch back up.
Right.
You gotta release, you gotta soften again.
You know, I was on the table today with this chick massaging me, and we were just talking a little bit, and she was like, yeah, my dad, you know, she was like, my dad complains about his back every single day. And I say to him, dad, let me work on your back. And he says, no, my back is going to be sore. And she went on we were just talking about how she said she feels it with men particularly, which for sure, even though I think it's more of a human crisis we're in right now, is where we don't know how to feel. And we're also terrified of feeling. And, you know, it comes down to, like, that's an act of surrender, to lay on the table and to just breathe into your body while this person has their way with you, with complete trust. That takes so much strength. Like you said, it's a spiritual strength. It's a strength in something greater than your own self, I feel like, even like it's a strength in it's a knowing that you're exactly where you need to be.
I mean, that surrendering feels so good because you allow any argument with what is to drop away. And when that argument and resistance of what is drops away, the actual field of sensation beyond that resistance is never as great as we thought it was going to be. Like, it's like, you know, all right, you feel anxious, right? Instead of resisting the anxiety, be like, no, I shouldn't feel anxious. It's like, go, let's take a little peek under the hood here and go deep into that and like go deep. Beyond that resistance, it's like, oh, there's really nothing there.
No.
It was all my own aversion reflected back at me by that mirror of resistance. And once I took away that wall, that energy got to flow freely. But you have to, that it's willingness. And you know, that surrender, every time I fucked up a microdose, it's like, oh, a lesson to surrender.
Yes, bro, yes. But yeah, so tell me, what does plant medicine nurse mean?
It's a terminology that I've used for the Instagram because I don't want to upset the overlords, but really I'm a cannabis nurse specialist. So
gotcha.
Looking at the human endocannabinoid system and the complex herbal medicine that is cannabis, I teach mostly practitioners, doctors, therapists, and pharmacists how to utilize this plant in a empowering and informed and mindful way that hopefully facilitates growth, and then being able to combine, you know, lifestyle integrations, because the medicine is only one component of the formula. The rest is like, all right, the medicine's working. What do we do now?
Mm-hmm.
How do you take this on board and recognize that this is power you're getting and you get to use this? So this is an opportunity to, again, change the way we relate to what is. And a big part of that is pain, and how much of the pain we experience is our resistance to the pain and then our emotional association of pain and damage. And if we can let go of the association to damage, we can flow with pain and recognize it as a source of growth and healing and change and power instead of something to be avoided at all times. And so that's, you know, a lot of my intention is combining these practices with this, you know, a catalyst, which is cannabis.
Wow, dude, that's wonderful. I had no idea. I love that. I'm sure you know I have an intimate relationship with cannabis. So I love that, bro. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's exciting.
So did you go to college?
No. I mean, yeah, I studied nursing, university. I studied nursing.
Oh, so you went to college to be a nurse?
Yeah.
Like a nurse in a hospital.
Mm-hmm. Full registered nurse.
Interesting. Yeah. Did you become a registered nurse?
Yep. So I am a registered nurse.
Okay.
I just didn't want to work in hospitals.
Yeah.
Like a year into my degree, because in Australia you're in the hospital straight away working, which is great. Like, I love helping, I love healing, I love working with people, but I'm like, I don't want to work in these parameters. And at the same time, I was curious about cannabis, and I was like, I'm gonna get into the industry in Australia. It got legalized in 2016. So I can't find any doors though, no front doors. And so it was my first time that I was like, oh well, okay, let's create a back door. And so I had my first podcast where I was like, what? Instead of asking and reaching, let them come to me. So I interviewed a bunch of the greats in the field and then chopped up clips, put it on LinkedIn, and then boom. Because I was the only person that was saying anything, they were like, this guy must know what he's talking about. I'm like, just think what you want to think.
Yep. Wow. When did you move to Oz then?
I've got an Australian mom and an American dad, so I've been back and forth for pretty much my whole life.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. When you said Montana, I pictured, like, you know, you're like in Montana and then you like make a move to Australia.
Yeah, pretty interesting idea.
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, it's like I mean, I love Montana deeply, and I also love this place. Like, going back and forth my whole life, I think that you develop a yeah, an ability to be where you are because you can't rely on friendship groups and the ever-changing nature of adolescence and those connections. And so you definitely develop this security of like, okay, I'm wherever I go, I'm gonna be happy. So I'm gonna make those choices that allow me to be happy, that create the conditions of happiness. I have to go to a meeting.
Oh, dude, no worries. No worries,
Yeah.
bro. Yeah, dude, we'll do it again. Dude,
Absolutely,
this has been
man.
awesome.
I knew you were gonna recalibrate my mood as well. So, I woke up a little bit of a cranky monster this morning,
Oh,
and
man.
I just knew because you see it. You see me, you get it.
Bro, I'm giving you
So
a big hug right now. And
feel it, dude.
yeah, man, I'm giving you a big hug. Have an amazing day.
You too, man.
We'll talk later. Enjoy your
Absolutely. All
meeting.
right. Much love, brother. Cheers.
Aloha,
See ya.
bro. Peace.
Aloha.